Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll answer a few questions and then I'll allocate some to the team to assist me. So the question I wanted to answer first is one on the number of meetings that we have had since April 1st. We've had 8 board meetings since April this year. Just to give an idea of those meetings so that people have a sense of what were a high level. The April meeting was to approve the quarterly report, which is the requirement before we come here. It must be approved by the board. On the 30th of May, we had to approve our annual financial statements. On the 19th of June, we had the bilateral meetings with the minister. On July the 5th, we had a meet and greet for the CEO and the CFO. And
on the third one, sorry.
Because the meet and greet for the CFO and the CEO, they've just joined. That was in July. In July 30th, we had a meeting to approve the quarterly report. In August, we had to approve the financials for the AGM prior to us having an AGM. Then on the 27th, we had an AGM meeting. Then in September, we had a meeting in September, but two of those meetings that I've mentioned were not paid meetings. So as a board, we've got scheduled meetings that we get paid for. But there's a number of other meetings that we meet and we don't get paid. I mean, one of the things that this board has done, we don't get paid for all the things we do and for all the meetings we hold. In fact, even with the meetings that we get paid for, we're not up to date because we always look at where the organization is in terms of their affordability. There was a question around agreements in the board. All the decisions that have been taken in the board, it's been unanimously agreed by all members. We've never had anybody disagreeing. I mean, it was specific on the turnaround. The turnaround was approved by all board members, and everybody is supportive of it. I'll give you the details. This one specific in terms of the date. I'll do that at a later stage. But just was to give you a sense of how many meetings we've had and what were those meetings about, and to reassure you that there is total alignment on the board on all of these matters. All right, I want to progress to the next question, which was about the giant security matter. It will be just to give you a high level, and then I'll ask John also to respond on that particular question. But what I reported last time was that because there were a number of accusations and counter-accusations on the whole matter, we then requested SIU to investigate the entire process. That investigation was going to help us understand what really happened. Initially, the alignment was that it's going to be a 6-month process. Unfortunately, SIU sent me a letter the day before yesterday informing me that they haven't been able to finalize the report. This matter was due to go back for us to go back to court on the yesterday, but because SIU has not finalized their report, we are at basically where we were 6 months ago, because that SIU report is the key input for us to proceed on the matter. But John will give a little bit more detail on that. John?
Thank you, Chair. This is one of dozens of contracts we had to review when we got onto the interim board, and as you know, we tore up a lot of them and closed them down, and that's how we achieved the saving of 400 to 500 million rand at that time. In the case of this one, there were improprieties brought to our attention. As a result, we took the decision we took. It was taken after discussion with our legal advisors, who advised us that we're not a rubber stamp. We're obliged to apply our minds. We did so. The decision was unanimous. The company you refer to is now suing the SABC, and the SABC is defending its decision. And as the chair says, the SIU, we asked the SIU to investigate, and they're doing the investigation. So that's really where we are.
John, John, you may as well tackle the question on the salaries. There was a question about the salaries of the executives. If you may please answer that.
Before that, can you give more elaboration on as to why after 6 months this thing is not finalized?
That's the SIU. We gave the SIU multiple cases, and in fact, earlier than this one, this was the last one where we gave them. They seem to be working with more urgency on this one than on some of the others. But the others, they've been working on for a year. On the salaries. As I said earlier, in terms of the Companies Act, we give all this information in our report, and for the financial year under review, it's all here. And I hope you will take a look at it. It's on page 65 and 66. And I think it shows a very clear trend. I don't have the figures for current salaries. I know they've been significantly reduced. But that's about all I can say now, but I hope you will interrogate the ones that we made public.
Okay.
All right, then let me allocate the other questions will be dealt with by the CEO, the ones that he gives to you.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair, I'll deal with two questions. The first one is, why do we continue employing whilst we're going through this process? One of the things we've agreed to is that whilst we're going through this Section 189 process, we should ensure that it does not affect business continuity and the operational requirements of what the organization should be doing. The positions that we have advertised and subsequently employed incumbents to were positions that are business critical, and these are quite key for our organization. Some of the positions, for example, the group executive for legal, as well as the group executive for technology, these were positions that fall, really, it happened prior to the process that we're going through. The second issue is the assertion that the whole process is a huge mess. In every single step that we've taken on this process, we've ensured that we are fully aligned with the prescripts of the law, and it is indeed a well-planned, well-thought-out process that is managed by people with expertise on this. Now, in terms of the details, when you're saying, I should share the reduction and so forth, you may recall that when we're here on the 25th of September, it was agreed, or rather the committee agreed that we should handle this process through the required consultative process with the organized labor. So I would be very careful not to do a parallel process whilst you're engaging with organized labor and then doing the same thing within this committee. We had been asked that once the process proceeds, would need to come and report, and this is something that we committed to doing. The CFO and the COO are going to answer the other questions, as well as GE for television. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. through you, Chair, I'd like to respond to Honorable Gaba's question, where he inquires whether we have had due recourse to cascade the operating model through our organization. In response, indeed, we have been in the process of sharing aspects of the operating model. On the 25th of September, when we appeared before this committee, we indicated to you what the aspects of the operating model were. The first aspect of the operating model really related to what we describe as key operating imperatives, which are essentially suggestions on what we should do in order to enhance various aspects of our business. The second key item relates to a fit for purpose. And that fit for purpose analysis effectively indicates whether our organization is structured in a way that can return maximum benefits to us and at the same time minimize key costs. The CEO has referred to the fit for purpose and the cost reduction exercises that we have been engaged in. In all of these exercises, we have shared with our executive committee. Our executive committee has had recourse to also cascade this to their various divisions in a way to ensure that there is greater understanding. I am not exactly sure about the date which this occurred, but our CEO held what we describe in the business as a rediffusion, which was basically a general staff meeting. At that staff meeting, under the direction of the CEO, we also shared aspects of this operating model that we were in a position to share. We were also very at pains to indicate that any processes related to what may be seen to be an unprocedural section 189 is by and large in terms of the fit for purpose informs aspects of this section 189. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will be responding to three questions, I think. The first one relates to the AGSA qualification area with respect to programs for women's sports rights. The specific qualification was actually related to program titles. Now, how it works in the accounting standard is an asset is annually supposed to be assessed for its useful life, and then you're meant to put through a value for that assessment in your annual financial statement. In this specific case, the program titles in question, or firstly, programs are deemed assets. So you are supposed to assess their useful life and then process the entry as I indicated. In the last two or three years, we have the Encore station, where we are broadcasting programs of yesteryear in a way. And it's only started gaining financial value, real traction in the last year or two specifically. And the issue of contention was that the organization did not believe the value to be significant enough for the qualification, certainly, because it before Encore came off, or we started the Encore channel, the value used to be maybe 18, 20 million rand per annum. Now it is a little bit more, so the conversation do take a bit of a different stance, and we are looking at how our policies and procedures respond to that. But we still remain concerned that there's unpredictability in terms of these kind of scheduling, as well as these days because of our liquidity situation, there's much more repeats that needs to be broadcasted. And as a result now, in terms of accounting standards, there should have been a value attached to it. So we and the AG are understand each other's point of view, but we can't yet find each other, and those conversations will continue. If you look at my next question, or maybe just a response, the items raised in fruitless and wasteful, specifically with respect to the value of the items and actions are being taken, because indeed it's very much fruitless and wasteful, and somebody should ideally have been held responsible. On the overtime, unauthorized overtime, I am led to believe that the Internal Audit Department is busy conducting a full investigation into that value and probably more, and the practices and procedures and etc. that informs the process, but certainly the value that's at in question here, and then the investigation is ongoing. With respect to the pay as you earn for fringe benefits, so, as well as the interest, penalties and fines, the two are related. It's with respect to fringe benefits that the organization did not tax employees on predating 2014. And you should actually have recovered it from the employees, but the organization chose to pay the tax on behalf of the employees, and as a result, it is deemed fruitless and wasteful. And the South African Revenue Service did raise penalties and interest because it's been such a long time. A long history behind it, in my understanding. engagements with unions, etc., at the time, and that's why the delays. And as the conversations were ongoing and the delays taking place, the consequences more penalties and interest. And maybe just a final comment on the asset register and the action plan. The specific area of qualification, as maybe I referred to earlier, relates to assets under construction. Now, in terms of the accounting world, that means you take you're going to have one asset, but it consists of components in the process. And where we and the AG are still have a difference of opinion, but are working to find each other, is that those components are supposed to have asset numbers and values, and that's not necessarily always possible. And the second thing is that AG, in terms of these standards, rightly so, are supposed to be able to physically verify these kind of assets. Now, if it's a component within a bigger component, which is maybe off-site in any case, or even on-site, but it's a part of a bigger asset, it's not always logistically possible, and that's where we are trying to find a way to mitigate the controls for our own sake as well as for the AG sake. But certainly there are things that we can do to improve and should be doing to improve our asset management in general.
Thank you, CFO. On the question of the benchmarking and how other broadcasters are doing it in the continent, I think we need to make the distinction that most of the broadcasters in the continent are actually state broadcasters and not really fully-fledged public broadcasters. SABC has got a unique positioning in that it has got an extreme public mandate that is not funded. Whilst we may have modeled the SABC alongside the BBC idea of TV licenses, South Africa didn't go the next step in terms of ensuring the compliance thereof. I don't think the BBC is a negotiation to pay for signal costs. It's something that is done as a tax, and that's that. And there's also the issue that in the BBC, for instance, the part that is funded by government does not have the pressure of financial sustainability. So where they've hired themselves off to operate as a PCS, which is BBC Worldwide, they are a fully-fledged commercial entity, which is a subsidiary thereof. So there are certain things that we've done, but we have not gone all the way, so we're getting stuck somewhere halfway. But it's also, I think, and I don't know, South Africa has got a culture of non-compliance in the sense of us as a nation, and that's also one of the things that we need to say, that what is it that gets people to then pay for the TV license, because we've also positioned the TV license, in my view, incorrectly, because we say TV licenses to get you the content. It's actually a signal cost. You pay your TV license to also access radio, to also access all the services, but the way that we've run with it to say the TV license, we get more content, it's broader than that. So I think even the repositioning of how and what a TV license is for is something that we need, and it's already a work in progress in terms of some of the turnaround, in terms of the reputation of the organization, to say that, see us for what we are. And of course, with the help that we're going to get from the committee in terms of reviewing the mandate. So if you look at some of the broadcasters in the continent, they don't have a mandate to be financially sustainable. They have a mandate to just, be the voice of the ruling party, whereas we have a different mandate to say, deepen the democracy at your own cost. So so we have in everything that we're doing. So yes, the whole thing needs to be reviewed.
Thank you, colleagues. Maybe just one more question that you had asked. Out of the, you wanted to know specifically which meeting approved the turnaround. It was the 30th of July meeting. Out of a total of 8 meetings that we've had since the beginning of the financial year, only 5 of the 8 were paid meetings. Thank you.
Are you done with all questions?
Yes, sir. We've answered all the questions.
Sorry, sir. I didn't, sir.
No, the medical aid fraud. The medical aid fraud, I know it's frustrating for the committee because we keep coming here and saying the same thing, but it is something that is outside of our control because it's already at different stages. Some of it is at the CCMA, some of them is arbitration, so we also await the final outcome.
Okay. Minister, and then
Yes, I think what Ms. Tiliso has raised also needs to be qualified. The state broadcasters are not party broadcasters, but they are government broadcasters. I think it would be incorrect to say they then broadcast on the mandate of the party in power. That's not. So there's a distinction between party and state. Secondly, that I think what we have been putting, it's around the broadcasting policy review, not the mandate, because the mandate is derived from the constitution, and hence the need for all of us to then say, with this constitutional mandate, how then do we make sure that government plays a very important role in ensuring that it is financially viable to execute that constitutional mandate, because it is established on the basis of the constitution. The third thing, Chair, that I also think would be quite important is also in the process around the review, would be those issues that have to take on board, say, your ENCO. If you have an ENCO of yesterday, and it being broadcasted now with the new development, how then do you package it, including your news channel, which is your 404, that has no, revenue stream? So we definitely have to deal with those issues, and I want to then say what is of importance is for all of us then to make sure therefore that the broadcasting policy review would actually be quite handy, as well as the issues that have to look at the capacity and the potential of the public broadcaster. Namibia, for example, has also repositioned itself, so it would be incorrect to also conclude that in Africa there isn't something similar or closer to where we are as a nation. I think Ethiopia as well is also moving in a much more multi approach of a public broadcaster as well as the commercial aspect. The issues around licenses, and I think we all have to look at that, the challenges around the collection methods and how in other situations the collection is totally different from us, and dealing with the culture of non-payment in South Africa. We must deal with that culture of non-payment, but we must also be able to say what makes those that are on pay TV never to skip a day without failure to pay. So it is those kind of things that you definitely have to look at so that you minimize the cost of collecting the little that you are able to collect. But you then create new opportunities and avenues. And that's part of what we are interested in even with National Treasury around to say, let's look at various options, and going forward with the migration, we can look at various platforms and various means of funding the SABC and making sure that South Africans also take responsibility of financing the public broadcast. Thanks.
Okay. Chair, my answers were not all answered, and I must say I'm not very impressed with the way they were answered, and then let me just explain. My question on the meetings was specifically with regards to the last 2 months and the turnaround strategy, because that's, I suppose, because of the financial crisis within the SABC. And the reason I'm asking that is if the last meeting was in July 30th, I want to know then, was all the decisions taken on that meeting, no meetings on this specific crisis, after 2 months later, no meeting? That's the one question that I want to park, because actually with this financial crisis, it is as bad as it seems, according to the AG report, you should actually meet once a week. Then the following question, I also didn't receive an answer on the conduct, if there was a, if the board or management conducted stills and salary audits. I didn't get that answer. And then also I'm not impressed with the board's answer on the salary. A refusal actually shows the members of the board's disregard. And I want to quote for you on the Broadcasting Act, Section 4B. It requires board members to be committed to the right on the, of the public to know, committed to openness and transparency. And a failure to reveal information shows a violation of the Broadcasting Act, and it cannot go without consequences. The reason why I say this, you tell me. I think maybe the board must think we as we as MPs are stupid, because I didn't ask last year's report. I asked what they're paying now at this stage, and I don't want to wait for an annual report, because we all know that you all know what everybody is paying in this room. And the refusal to answer is like the cloudy culture, that it's not on, that we cannot ask a question and get an answer. If the board didn't have a problem with the photos of the new appointees in this annual report, why must we wait till next year to get our answer on that?
No, sir.
Mine is well, the board is here going to answer for it. Sir, mine is totally on the different. My questions were answered. But mine is very, I think we must commend the minister and his, and their cabinet. You know, I was just looking at the decisions of the cabinet with the speed with which their announcement, they are moving in making sure that South Africa migrates immediately. My only question, and my interest here, I must be honest, is biased towards the parliamentary channel. with, we know with this decision to check whether the SAPC can be able to move with speed towards getting into this stage of the GTT. And especially, though I'm raising this channel problem, is viewed by people who are in DSTV, multi-choice, most of the people do not see it. So they are denied this information in making sure that they follow what their government is doing. So with this, which poses challenges to SABC, expansion, will you be able to actually expand your channels and begin to have channels which are exclusively dedicated to health, education, and other aspects of society, more than what you are seeing on SABC 1, 2, 3? Just to add on that, these channels with what the decision of the cabinet has actually. So to me, this is a significant step taken by cabinet, which poses a challenge to SABC in moving with speed, you know, towards digitalization.
Can you start with the last question? Honorable Kalako. And then on issues that Honorable Van Dijk raised, you then respond thoroughly. I want to give you time to respond to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question around the timelines, for the parliamentary channel and the sport channel. The minister is already reaching to us, to the board, inquiring. So the team is looking at the feasibility and the timeline, and we'll communicate in due course.
So just to give an update, Chair, that we've already written the letter to our counterparts in Parliament, and we've also written the letter to ICASA. The resolution we started enacting on Monday. As you know, that we do need channel authorization from ICASA, but we do hope that to also support the migration, that probably in the next 2 weeks or so, we'll be able to then put our parliamentary channel on DTT. Now, the other part of it is that we had agreed with Parliament that we are going to then do an overnight on our normal SABC2. But for now, we are prioritizing putting it on DTT in the hope that it will also drive up the uptake. The other proposal that we have put to the DTT team is that with us having received the rights to our T20, that we want to put a pop-up channel for the T20. We're just waiting for a sense of comfort in terms of all the other logistics. But that's so come the end of or mid-November, we should be having those two channels on DTT, and hopefully it will assist with the uptake of the registration.
Just in terms of the skills audit, the last skills audit that we did was in 2013, and we are in the process of doing a more recent one. The link between the skills audit as well as the section 189, the Act is very clear. If any employer contemplates embarking on section 189, there are three, from a business rationale point of view, there are three key areas we focus on. It's economic, structural, as well as technology. So we are aware that we would need to look at all of the competency gaps. We need to look at what we have internally in terms of the skills audit. But as you may appreciate, owing to financial constraints, we will not be able to do skills audit within the current financial year. Thank you.
Chris? Thank you, Chair. In relation to Honourable Van Dijk's question, with regards to the frequency of meetings, let me attempt to answer it in the following way. That we as executive directors, that is the CEO, the COO and the CFO, are mandated by the board to engage in the daily execution of such mandate that we receive from the board. Over and above this oversight that the board has, which is regular, and it is to ensure that this mandate is applied accordingly after they have authorized, there are subcommittees of the board. And these subcommittees of the board, through ensuring that the resolutions of the board, which are passed down to executive committee, executive directors for execution, are monitored and tracked on a regular basis. It has been pointed out by our chair that indeed, even without being remunerated, you know, sufficiently for all of the meetings, they do meet regularly to provide us with such guidance and oversight. So I'd like to give Honourable Van Dijk some comfort that indeed, even though the board in its entirety may not come together to contemplate what the next steps are about execution, they would have mandated us. They would have ensured that their instructions are carried out. We take this very seriously. And over and above that, the three executive directors have a forum of executive directors where we sit under the leadership of our CEO, where he also ensures that we are on a daily basis executing on this board mandate.
Thank you, colleagues. Thanks a lot. I think it's important that we shouldn't measure the effectiveness of the board by the number of meetings they have. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, if we exceed the scheduled meetings, we have to get authorization from the minister to have meetings beyond what's been agreed. So as a board, what we've done in realizing the situation we're in, we have subcommittees like the CEO always explained, but we don't have to meet every day because we're in a crisis, because that would cause other problems.
Thank
Thank you very much. Any other questions?
I think they still want to give an answer on the salary packages.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me. John did answer this question, but let me just explain and try to provide clarity. We are hiding nothing as a board. It is not that we are not being transparent, but we've got to take everything into context. The Companies Act states or stipulates clearly that those numbers need to be part of the financial report, which is what John referred to, and which is what we've tabled today. That's the first thing. The second thing is there is context in everything that we need to be doing. We need to be clear about what the purpose of releasing these numbers outside of the required or prescribed time frame. That's the first thing. The second thing is that going to basically help us with the challenges we face? We face with a salary bill of 3.1 billion as we speak. Focusing on what the executives, CEO, COO, CFO are earning is not going to help us, for an example, address the issue that we face with. We've spoken a lot today about benchmarking. Have we done a benchmark to understand, for an example, that organizations of our size, 7.2 billion rand, what salaries get paid? But also, I need to explain that SABC is not funded fully by government. We get 3% from government, so the bulk of our revenue comes from commercial activities, which means we have to go out in the market, compete for the best talent, well-experienced people, for us to be able to have people who can get us out of the situation we're in. But as the board, we would be guided by this committee because we are accountable to this committee. What we are uncomfortable with is attending to other requests outside of the prescribed timeline because we don't want to create a precedent and cause problems. So maybe if the committee can provide guidance to say what's the way forward, how would they want us to deal with this request? Because the truth of the matter is it's clear on the Companies Act how we need to deal with such matters. I will basically hear and take guidance from the portfolio committee on this matter.
Okay. Well, responses are given by the board, and there are no further questions. So that we conclude this meeting, we'll meet SABC again. And if there are matters that we want to put in the agenda of that meeting, we will. So, Minister, we are done with the responses. If you have a word before I adjourn the meeting, that is fine. Remember we said as we proceed with the turnaround strategy, we'll always call upon the board to come and brief us when it's necessary. So we'll do that. It's not the end of the year. We'll call you again. And if there are further questions, I will deal with them at that point. Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. Some of the issues that have been raised, I think we will commit that on a quarterly basis as we bring our report in line with the shareholders' compact, we'll be able to respond on the progress that has been made so far. Secondly, the processes of filling the vacancies, we're quite delighted, Chair, about what you've just shared with us on the process from your side around the vacancies in the SABC board. The issues around the funding model and the repositioning of the SABC, those are matters that are related also to the broadcasting policy review, and we hope that beyond just dealing with the current issues, we also have to look at the future of the SABC and the mandate of the SABC. And the last thing I want to indicate here is that you yourselves as members of parliament, you've got more of institutional memory of the SABC and knowledge compared to many of us seated on the side. In fact, myself and the deputy minister, DG, the chair, the whole side here. So we will also rely on the basis of your experience and understanding, and even an appreciation that it will take this collective to deal with the issues. I want to also apologize if honorable members have found some of the responses not satisfactory. I'm sure you also know that there are processes where you can ask the executive through myself and the deputy minister to give you the responses, but understanding also that the presentation here today was on the annual report of the financial year under review. On that score, I would really wish to thank yourself and as I've said, your own historical knowledge of where the SABC comes from should also help us to then say how do we collectively take the SABC forward. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honourable members.
Thank you, Minister. In conclusion, you know, members who have been here from 2016, I think this is where it starts. Trying to turn around the situation in SABC. All of us know what we did in relation to the board before this one, before the entire board. Things were not that good. But I think from the period of the interim board and this board, things have shaped, or rather, things are shaping in SABC. And I think all of us must put our shoulder behind the success of this turning around the situation in SABC. Turning around in terms of ensuring that we have a team from the executive side that we have. You know, it's a good step. Because if you don't have leadership in any organization, then you won't be able to turn around the situation. And I think so far there is progress. So far there is some turning around or turning the corner at the level of the National Broadcaster. We still have to do more, for sure. We still have to do more, but I think where all of us have done well, we must say so. We must not just say there is nothing happening as if really there is nothing happening. There is something happening in changing the situation in SABC. I was saying to the minister, not knowing that in this call, that I wish, and I can say it again, that I wish we had more time because of all of us are hands on this. But there will be a sixth parliament that is coming after us. And whatever we hand over to the sixth parliament, at least those who are coming after us must take over a vehicle that is moving. And I think they will. I think they will because it is moving. Members, I want to say thank you very much for the presentation. Thanks very much for what you are doing. Because we need to congratulate you so that we are not demoralized when you leave Parliament, when you are doing good work. Because we need more. can those who have the thank you very much on the meeting, Mr. Chair.
I haven't, I didn't apply my mind.
Yeah.
Nomsa, did you apply your mind? Should be a response. Can we get together? Are you going to the thing in with the sports, with the sports department and the oh, okay. When are you up? Are you based in Pretoria? In Johannesburg, yeah. Can we meet up next week? But you have to understand her concern because her KPA, she loses audience, she does not perform.